great pleasure being here. It's a great zuchus to to be invited back here to YU. I believe this was the classroom that I gave my Kol Elyon Bechinas in. Is that true? Do they do that still in this room? You don't know. But I think in my day, this is where we gave Kol Elyon Bechinas. So I did. Yes. I think that's. So I'm sitting in a seat. Wow, that's pretty bad. So I think this was the Chabur, the room that we had it in. So it's a really great honor to be here. I never thought I'd be asked to give a shiur on the topics of the actuarial science. It is certainly a nice challenge. I'll give you a sheet, yeah? Very nice challenge to go through and think about what topics that could be related to this. But just a little background about myself so you guys can understand where I'm coming from. Just a very simple background. And at the end, I want to, before remind me to finish off with any questions you might have, feel free, I'll leave that at the end. But I went to Frisch. You and I connected in Frisch. What's your name again, Englewood?
Zach.
So Zach and I went to Frisch, not together, but we were there, the same high school, different campuses. I was never at the new campus. And from then, I went on to Akotel, then learned in YU for many years. And I'm guessing those of you who have decided the actuarial track probably decided that. The same reason why I decided that is because you probably were very, very good at math when you were younger. And some adult said to you, or probably a few adults said to you, you probably should be an actuary. So you put that in your mind and said, okay, I'm going to be an actuary because that sounds like a very nice job. It's they say the time is good, and it's good money, it's a very balanced work life. And we'll see, I'll show you some of my own experiences whether that's really the case or not. But that's how I was led onto the path of being an actuary, because I was told that you're good at math, you should be an actuary. Now, when you're young and you're in college, you don't really know what's out there so much. But I was very happy to be an actuary. I worked 2 summers in PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC. It's an accounting firm. So they have a division as an actuarial department. I worked there 2 summers and then worked 1 year full-time as an actuary. And then I retired and came back to finish Shmicha and went on to learn the Kol Elyon. And now I'm teaching in Esh Kodesh. So I'm very proud that I was an actuary once upon a time. I have it prominently displayed on my bio on YU Torah. It's there that I worked in as an actuary in PricewaterhouseCoopers. An old colleague of mine who's now a partner in PwC, he noticed that and very much appreciated the fact that I included that in my bio. So I'm proud of it because why not? I had a great experience there. I'm able to relate to people who work every single day and have that struggle of what it means to balance a family and balance learning and balancing work. It's a lot to juggle. And when you're an actuary, you have a fourth thing to juggle, that's taking tests. So there are 4 things. When you become an actuary, it's harder. Yes, they give you days off. They give you a time to study for these things. There are incentives. But it just makes an extra thing to try to juggle. I'm not trying to discourage anyone. I'm just trying to be real. And that was really the reason why I left. I wanted to learn more. And I was struggling finding the time to learn. I was very, very mentally strained. And I just couldn't balance all that together, so I decided to make a decision and leave. But I gained a tremendous amount of exposure to what it's like to go to the city every single day. What it's that exhausting commute is like, taking the train and the subway and the bus, when it's really, really hot out, when it's really, really cold and it's snowing and it's raining and it's wet. It's a big challenge. I'm happy I could relate to Baal Batim who have that struggle. I know what it's like firsthand. There's mental stress. You would get home from work trying to go to night seder. Your mind is just completely absorbed in the work, and all you think of is Excel spreadsheets in your mind going through, and you're trying to get a daf of Gemara in your mind. It's very, very hard. And I'm just trying to be real. If people could do it, you can do it. But the first thing is you have to know it's hard. It's not as easy as it may seem. Some people have it easier than others, but it requires a lot of navigating through these different challenges. You're meeting new types of people. You're here in Yeshiva University. For the most part, in your chevra, you're going through the YP program, you're not that exposed to people outside, and you don't have to be exposed to those who you don't want to. But when you go to the workforce, you have to start making friends with your coworkers. Some are Jewish and not religious, which sometimes are harder than those who aren't Jewish at all. You're struggling with certain ways they dress and sneeze. You're struggling with going out to eat and going out to drink with them. These are all halachic, struggles that you're going to face in the work field, regardless of whether you're an actuary or not. But something that I gained firsthand experience to be able to appreciate what they went through. So I want to walk through something that had I had this perspective when I was an actuary, I don't know if I would have quit. And I'll start off with a few weeks ago, I was asked to speak to a group of Australians. They were doing some program, a CEER program from for Australians who visited various cities in the United States, and they came to New York. They wanted to come to Esh Kodesh. So I sat down with around 10 of them in the social hall, around the table, many of which didn't know much about Gemara, Hebrew. A couple of them were a little bit more educated. And they wanted me, the Madrich wanted me to learn a small piece of Gemara with them. And afterwards I opened up for some questions. And one of the boys asked me, you know, why do we still learn Gemara? It seems to be very outdated. It's 2,000 years old almost. So there's so many things in the world, electricity, electronics, computers, iPhones. Isn't it old? Why do we still learn it? And so I said to him that it's much more advanced than you imagine. If you look at the Hakdama to the Nishmas Avram, he goes to the various types of medical advancements that they have, and he brings a number of sources in the Gemara and the Rishonim that they had back then, which we didn't even realize. We don't appreciate what they had available back then. And there are many, many sources like this. I had a chavrusa with a very, very successful real estate person who owns a lot of real estate. And he was amazed at the intellect, the sophistication that the Amoraim and Tanaim had. This is like American law. He thought like the American Constitution was so sophisticated and all the court cases, and it's all written 2,000 years, the same logic and the same systems at a much more advanced level. And what I told him is that although there was no electricity in the times of the Gemara, there is so much out there, so much depth to the world, to Shas, to Halacha, that it all is very applicable and used as models to Paskin Shilas even now in 2018. So I want to walk through with you some areas of Shas, which is going to hopefully give you a different perspective when you go out to work, whether it's an actuary or not. This focus is an actuary, but any area that you focus on, any work that you do, it's actually, if you connect it to the Torah, it's going to make it much more lively for you. Because right now, what your perspective is, you guys are all learning the Beis Medrash. And you guys are dreading the day you walk out of this Beis Medrash, where your parents or whatever obligations you have are making you go work and to make money. You are dreading that day. And you're going to dread going to work, and you can't wait till you get home and learn. You wake up in the morning to learn. You're going to dread being in work. I want to change that perspective. I want to change that perspective where you guys view working as something, as an elevated status, where you're actually, in some way, some form, it's a way of learning. It's a way of limud HaTorah. Let's begin first, the first source here, number one, is a very well-known Tosos and Brachos Daf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. The Gemara is talking about Birchas HaTorah, and Tosos asks a very famous question: why is it when it comes to Sukkah, when you walk out of the Sukkah, and you come back in to eat, you have to say a bracha, a new bracha each time, leishe basukkah. As opposed to birchas haTorah, we say one bracha in the morning, and no matter how many breaks you take along the way, that bracha in the morning, it covers all the learning throughout the day. You learn in the morning, you go to work, you come home 12 hours later, you learn again, you don't need a new bracha. So Tosas writes, v'yesh lomar d'shayni Torah. Torah is very different. She'eno miyayish daito de'eno miyayish daito. A person never stops thinking about learning. A person has to learn every second. And you're thinking in work, I need to learn now. Unfortunately, I'm working, but I really need to learn. I need to learn. It's like he's sitting, Yoshev kol hayom below hefsek. He's sitting and just can't wait to get in the train to open up his mishnayos, his shnai mikra, his gemara, and to learn. You hate being in work, and you just can't wait to the next second to be able to learn. And that was my thinking. Baruch Hashem, I got a lot of learning done on the trip there, the trip back. I had a Chabad down the block. I would go for a little bit of extended mincha hour. At my lunch, I ate during work, and my mincha became an hour. I learned for 45 minutes. That's not stealing, because I was given an hour lunch break. But there's a Chabad down the block. I learned there for a little bit. I couldn't wait till I got my hands on a sefer to learn again. So that was my perspective. I just had a chiv. I was Yoshev kol hayom below hefsek. So that's why I was always thinking of learning. And I didn't need a hefsek. I didn't need a new bracha. And the Tzlach says it's actually a very important halacha here, that when it comes to women, women do say bracha in the morning, the whole lumdus of the brisker Torah, because they have to say bracha in chetzesha Torah. Women say bracha in the morning, because they also have to learn. They're yecholin lilmo Torah shebechsav. They can learn chumash. They can learn other things, not for now what they can learn or what they can't learn. But There's no chiv to learn. So therefore, I did not bold it, but the last line, let's say they come home and work at night. Rather, they work all day and come home and learn a second time. They have a night seder. They have to say another bracha at night because they're not chayiv. They're not being yoshev u'mitzapa. They're not waiting for the next time to learn. Amnam the tzlach l'nod b'huda. You can see it's l'matzasi b'zeh zecha b'divrei arishonim v'achorim. I didn't find this anywhere, so you can't really pask in this way, but it's interesting theoretically. But there's a whole nother angle that Rav Shlomo Zalman says. Halicha Shlomo Perek Vav Os Dalad, which was written by one of his Talmidim, Nashim Shebaruchu Birchas Torah B'Shachar, they say the bracha in the morning, V'lom Dos Shuv Be'em Sayom, then they learn a second time later on in the day, Einon Tzrichas Levarach Pam Shenis. They don't need to say it a second time, Birchas Torah. Shafapisha Ein Chayiv Ein Aleim Chobas HaTam Torah. There's no Chiv, so there's not Yoshev Mitzapeh. They don't give up. What does that mean? Me'isura Torah u'mikol ha'mitzvot she'aleihem lishmor l'kayem. Even though they're not thinking about the next time that they have to learn, there's so many halachas that you have to keep. I believe that Taz says this as well. I didn't find it, but I believe he does. I think the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Taz as well. That they're thinking about all the halachas that have to be kept of not stealing time from the work. About going to the bathroom and saying Asher Yatzar, about washing hands and saying a motzi and benching, about being honest on the job, honest with your coworkers, not lying, clocking in properly. There's so many lachas stealing from their, you know, they usually have, if it's a big place, they have a whole, I forget what it's called already, not a pantry, but an area you could get pens and papers. You could just clean out the whole area and bring them for your whole family at home if you wanted. No one's checking up on you. That could be stealing. There's so many lachas that you need to keep in mind. You just can't forget about the Torah. So even though women aren't learning all day, and men aren't learning all day either, but they're keeping halacha, and that's a continuity, that's a ritzifus from the bracha in the morning, that's continuing the Torah until you learn it again. So even a kiyum mitzvah, fulfilling mitzvahs, is also a kiyum in limud ha-Torah. It doesn't serve as a hefzik. So I want to take this a step further now. This Rav Shlomo Zalman is talking about in general, no matter what area of work you're in. But imagine if you're working in an area and you could actually find sugyas to learn about what you're working on. If you're a lawyer, you're a real estate lawyer, well, you learn Bava Basra, you can learn all about borders and buying houses and selling houses and properties. Any type of job you want to be and you want to do, there are sugyas to learn. So imagine you bring your work to life. You're working on mortality tables. You're working on numbers of death rates, of health care rates. You're working on life insurance. Whatever type of actuary you want to be, that is going to be found in the Shas somewhere, some clearer than others. So I want to walk through, not in depth, but a survey of a few areas that came to mind. I reached out to an old coworker, a learned individual, who gave me some ideas as well of various sugyas that might connect to mortality and casualty and property damages and statistics, in which case you could just see how this will come to life, that being an actuary, and again, this could go to any industry. If you want to be a lawyer, doctor, there's of course a sugya you could find, but again, since this topic is being an actuary, I brought some topics to bring to light. And again, just a very superficial to give you some food for thought. So there's a Gemara. The Mishnah tells us, the Gemara in the Sukkah, Daf Chaf Gimel, when it comes to building a sukkah, number four, there's a machlokas whether or not you're allowed to use an animal as a wall of a sukkah. So one opinion says that Rabbi Meir holds pasul and Rabbi Yehuda machshir. Rabbi Yehuda thinks it's kasher. You have a wall, a big elephant serves as a wall, so that's a wall. That's one of the defanos of the sukkah. Rabbi Meir, on the other end, says it's pasul. Such a wall is disqualified. Asks the Gemara, jumping down a few lines, my time of the Rabbi Meir, what was the reason why he disqualified using an animal as a wall of a sukkah? So there's a machlokas amaroi. Abai Amar Shema Thomas, that animal might drop dead and you've lost your wall. Rabbi Zeira says, Shema Tivrach, maybe the animal's going to run away. Both very sensible reasons why not to use an animal as your wall. So the Gemara then goes on to say in the bottom of number four here, Ulman Amar Gzeira Shema Tivrach. According to Rabbi Zeira, who felt that the animal might run away, Maybe we should be concerned that the animal just drops dead. Says the Gemara, Misa lo shchicha. There's a machlokis between Abaye and Rabbi Zeira within the opinion of Rabbi Meir, whether or not Misa shchicha or Misa lo shchicha. Is death something that's common or not common? Very simple. So that's related to mortality tables. Mortality tables are, a person's trying to create a pension plan, how much money he should put away to know how long he's going to live for. If he's this age and a male versus female lives in this area, they're very sophisticated mortality tables to work with. Now the Gemara doesn't seem concerned with any of that stuff. The Gemara says the elephant's going to just die or it's not going to die. Well, shouldn't we take into account how old is this elephant? How healthy is the elephant? Is it a female? Is it a male? No, the Gemara just says, Shema Thomas, Misa lo shchicha, Misa shchicha. Is it common or is it not common? They completely ignore any statistics. That stuff is quite interesting. Then the Gemara says, if you look at number 5, Umi Amar Abaye, Rabbi Meir, Chayish Lemisa, is it really true that Abaye holds that Rabbi Meir is a choshesh for death? Hatanan, the Mishnah tells us, Bas Yisrael shenisesh lekohen. A Jewish girl is married to a kohen. The lach is she's allowed to eat truma. Right, a kohen eats truma. A bas Yisrael normally does need truma. But when she gets married to a kohen, the pasuk says she's now allowed to eat truma. So the Gemara says, "V'halach ba'ila l'bindinas hayam." Let's say husband goes overseas. So now it's possible the husband may have died. So the Gemara says, "Ocheles b'truma b'chezka shehu kayim." She's allowed to continue to eat truma. Now, if her husband dies, she can't eat truma anymore. So how is she allowed to eat truma? Isn't there a chashash that her husband dropped dead somewhere overseas? The halach is she's allowed to continue to eat truma. But then the Gemara says, Uriminhun, Uraminan, Allah hareza giteich, husband says to his wife, here's your get, sha'achas kodem misasi. The husband doesn't want to get, make his wife a widow. Why not? What's going to happen if his wife becomes an almana? So perhaps they have no children, and there's a brother-in-law, and the brother-in-law has to do yibum chalitza. He doesn't want his wife to be subject to yibum chalitza. He'd rather her be a grusha and marry someone else. She can't marry a kohen anymore, but at least she's not stuck to the brother-in-law. So he says, this is your get an hour before I die. So the get will be chal before the death takes place. So now he could die any given second. So at what point, the moment she's divorced, so she can't eat shum anymore. So at what point is there a chalo? So if he dies, wherever that death is, an hour before, you don't know when the hour is before until he dies, and that's too late. So you have to assume every second he might die an hour from now, an hour from now. And so the Gemara says, Asura lechel truma b'yad. Right away, she has to stop eating truma because he could die an hour from right now. So this brisa says that we are choshesh lemisa, and therefore she has to stop eating now. But the Mishnah earlier, when he went overseas, the Mishnah says that we could assume he's still alive and she can continue to eat truma. Are we choshesh lemisa or not? And the Gemara answers, Abaye says, Lo kasha ha Rabbi Meir de lo chayish lemisa ha Rabbi Yehuda de chayish lemisa. To machlokes tanoim whether we're choshesh lemisa. But we see from here though that Rabbi Meir this time is not choshesh lemisa, but before he was choshesh lemisa. So I don't want to get too involved in all this, but you see, in trying to pin down Rabbi Meir's Shita, it's somewhat unclear. The Gemara does an epoch, switches around the Tanaim, fine. I want you to jump without getting, again, I don't want to be too in-depth here, but look at number 6, the continuation of this sugya. It's a very fascinating sugya, but there's one important line here the Gemara concludes with Shita Rabbi Meir. Amar lecha Rabbi Meir, misa shchicha, b'kias hanod l'shchicha. The Gemara quoted a brisa above about a chashash of a jug of wine possibly breaking. So Rabbi Meir says, I'm choshesh that misa could happen. Misa is very, very common. People die every single day. A breaking of the b'kias hanod, a jug, is not common to break. Lo shchicha. So what this has is, there's something called in the world of the actuarial world, there's mortality and there's casualty, there's property damage. Which one has a higher percentage of happening? Is a car there going to be a car accident or is there going to be a death? So according to the Gemara assumes death is more frequent than property damage. That's an interesting assumption. Now we would say, why don't you just take the statistics and find out which one happens more often or not? So this is the Gemara's assumption. So now look what Rashi says in the next page for Shitas Rabbi Yehuda, number 7. Rabbi Yehuda says, "Chayish lebekiyas hanod v'kol shekein lemisas adam." Rabbi Yehuda was choshesh that a jug of wine will crack. Property damage is very, very common, and kal v'chomer misa. A person, misa is more shchiach than property damage. Death is more frequent than property damage. So that's a very different than Rabbi Meir. So says the Mitzvah Eisan in the back of the Gemara. So I don't get this. He says, Rashi's telling me that property damage is less frequent than a person dying? He says the opposite should be the case. Or opposite, the other way around. He says, Misa as Adam is more shchiach, more frequent than property damage. He says property damage is more frequent than Misa. Why? He says a very fascinating point, and then we'll move on to the next piece. He says because man, Adam, the Gemara says, Islay Mazla. Man has a mazel, which the Gemara Baba Kama, Rishon have a few different interpretations for. One means that he could protect himself. A person is aware of what's going on, according to one Pshat and Rashi. He has mazel. He watches out and eats what he's healthy. He makes sure he doesn't get hurt and killed. As opposed to Bekiyas Nod is simply an object, it's more susceptible to being damaged. So he has a whole new Pshat within Rashi because he thinks that property damage is more likely than death. But the simple reading in Rashi is that death is more frequent than property damage. So this is one area to think of, the interesting sugya, in terms of statistics of property damage versus mortality. Let's move on. Yes?
The way Rashi reads that would be nice in terms of statistics. Both Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda would be agreeing that Misa is always more frequent. It's just a question of how frequent is property damage.
Exactly.
Which they could know, probably, based on how often things happen.
Exactly. But for some reason, this Chazal did not take in statistics, but I think you are correct. They both are making that same assumption of the relativity to each other. They both hold that Misa is more shchicha than property damage. Next sugya is found in Maseches Makos, one of the hardest dafs in Maseches Makos. Those who've learned it, Daf Gimel comes out as a very challenging Gemara, Rashi there as well. And one of the hard things about learning the Gemara and Rashi, and for anyone, but even for mathematicians, the way they did math was very, very different than the way we do math nowadays. The adding and subtracting, it's very, very strange from our perspective. I don't know if you guys had this when you were in high school. My kids now who are in elementary school, I try to do math with them. I don't understand what they're doing. It's everything's backwards to what I was taught. It's a whole new system. I forget what it's called now. What's the system that they all...
Common Core.
They have this Common Core, which I hate, because it wasn't the way I was taught how to think in math. So I need to... My wife teaches fourth grade, so I let her do all the fourth grade stuff, because I just don't get how they're thinking. So I think Rashi and the Gemara also had a different way of approaching the math. Of course, you get the same result, but just everything seems to be very, very different. So sometimes it gets confusing. So there's an interesting Mishnah in Maseches Makos Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara and Makos are talking about Eidim Zomimim. And the Mishnah says, number 10, Me'idim anu es ish ploni shegirish es ishto v'lonasin l'ksuba. Two Eidim testify that Reuven divorced his wife and he hadn't yet paid his ksubater. So now he's found, the two Eidim are found to be Eidim Zomim. So now they tried making Reuven to lose $200, let's say. So they have to pay $200 now to Reuven. But it's not so clear, the Mishnah says. V'alo ben hayom uvein l'machar sofa liten la ksuba. But eventually, he would have to pay the $200 there. Eventually, if they get divorced, he'd have to pay $200 there. Or if he dies, the state has to pay $200 there. So eventually, he would have to pay. So really, you have to omdin kama adam. You have to evaluate how much a person be rotza litain b'ksuvasa shazu. How much a person's willing to pay for the ksuba. Meaning what? That I'm going to pay the wife, listen, there's a 2 out of 3 chances you're going to get the ksuba. If your husband dies, or if your husband divorces you, you're going to collect the ksuba. So I'll pay you now $75 as an investment. You have $75 now, and then hopefully sooner than later, I'll get the ksuba of $200, hopefully in a few years, as opposed to 50 years. That's the investment I'm willing to make. Or the other option is that if she dies, if the wife dies, so then no one collects the ksuba, and I get nothing. I invested money, there's a risk involved, and the husband keeps it if the wife dies first. So you have to evaluate, what is my investment that a person be willing to invest to this wife to pay her. So now the Gemara says, do you go based on what you would invest with the chances that the wife collects? Or do you go based on what the husband would collect? I could also invest with the husband. I could say, I'll pay you $50 on the chance that your wife dies first, and then I'll collect the $200 that you would have otherwise paid her, I'll collect from you. So you have two different angles. So being very simplified, two out of three chances the woman is going to collect, and one out of three chances the husband's going to collect the ksuba or keep the ksuba. That's the very simple reading of the Mishnah. The Gemara makes things a little bit more challenging. Rashi also throws in a whole other angle, which also throws off some things, because he says the husband gets to eat from the property during that time. You also have to detract that. Fine. I'm interested in the Shitas HaRif. The Rif adds in something very, very important. The Rif quotes from the Gaonim here, Rav Chista, the underlines in number 11. Rav Chista Amar, Bibal Hayeshnu, you have to ask the question, well, Zaken, Shugim Minaga Olam, Karv Lamisa, Yosem Nebachrim. Well, the Gemara never mentions the age. Well, wouldn't that be very, very important? If I'm going to give a 24-year-old husband an investment, I'm not expecting to see that money in a long time. I'm not willing to pay so much money for it. If the guy's 99, so I'm going to receive that good return very soon, likely. So that all depends on his age. And also you have to ask, Hacholehu or Barihu, is he healthy? Is he sick? I also have to know that. When you guys get life insurance, if you don't have yet, you should get when you get married. So what they're going to do is they're going to send a nurse over to you, and she's going to take blood and do blood work on you and test you, your weight and your height, and they're going to do a very basic medical checkup to see how healthy you are, what they're willing to invest in you. Are you going to die in 5 years from now, or statistics tell me you're going to die in 85 years from now? So that's very important to take into account. And he also asks, Hayesh lo nechasim rabim shekar be'enav legarsha. Does he have a lot of property? Because remember, if he has a lot of property, he doesn't care to divorce her. That's another $200. He's got $5 billion. But if he's got very little property, so divorcing her, he's going to think twice before he's going to divorce her. So these are important things you have to take into account. Very important factors. So while the Gemara and Rashi seems to ignore this, these are very important facts you have to take into account when figuring out life insurance. Now, the Baal Meor doesn't like the Rif. Now, as always, the Baal Meor is very, very challenging to read. But it seems like he's saying the Rif was trying to look at the perspective from the husband in a vacuum and the wife in a vacuum. The Baal Meor says you have to look at the whole picture, both of them. You have to look at not just the percentages as the husband. Well, he's married to an old wife, a healthy wife. You have to look at everything in the aggregate and then make a decision. And there's a Mechamis Hashem here as well. Again, this is just very superficial. This would be the sugya to be ma'ayin into if you're looking into the sugya of life insurance. Now, also, this is a more famous topic I didn't want to go into because it was somewhat famous, but whether or not you're allowed to buy life insurance, that's a whole other topic. That's not figuring out life insurance. That's whether you should buy life insurance. Is that a lack of bitachon? By you buying life insurance, do you lack bitachon in Hashem? Rav Moshe is a very famous shuva. Look it up to read it. He says you're allowed to, but take a look there. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky also, he bought life insurance. The story goes that he would calculate every single year about what his value was, whether it's worth investing in the life insurance. He got to a certain age where he figured out it wasn't worth him buying life insurance anymore, and then he stopped buying the life insurance, something along those lines. Let's do one last topic here, and that's when it comes to statistics in general. I just got a shiloh the other day. A lady had asked me if she has to check quinoa. I got an email from the Vada Five Towns that one of the brands of quinoa was infested with bugs, and they took them off the shelves. Anyone who has them at home should take them out and throw them in the garbage. They were infested. So that prompted one of the ladies from the shul to ask me, do you have to check quinoa in general? So the halacha is, if you look at number 14, the Ramah writes, now the Ramah is talking about checking lungs. When you shecht an animal, you have to check the lungs. They blow into the lungs of the animal and to see if there are any holes. Because if there's a puncture in the lung, that's a trefa. What's a trefa, guys? A trefa is if an animal, Gemara and Chulin tells us, cannot live for more than a year, by definition, that animal is called a trefa. Well, how do you know? You shechted the animal, it's dead. You can't test out how long it lives. So Gemara provides a number of different trefos that we could assume it could not have lived longer than 12 months. And one of them is if you find a puncture in the lung, which is very, very common, that would indicate it couldn't live much longer. Now, it's very common to have punctures in the lung. Why? Because the cows feed on the fences. And the fences oftentimes have nails in them. The nail goes in their stomach and punctures their lungs. It also goes in their trachea, I guess. It mixes the different types. I don't know how it goes on. The stomach's a whole mess down there in the animal. They have four stomachs, actually, the cow. So somehow it punctures along the way, and it's not uncommon to have a puncture in the lung. So they have to blow the lungs out after shechting it and taking it apart to make sure it's not a trefa. So at what point do you have to assume, do you have to check every single animal for a lung? So there are Ramah Paskins, number 14, Velo Mahani Behem in Bade Karov. Let's say you've got 100 dead cows, 100 dead goats. I check 51 of them. They're all kosher. Can I assume now the rest are also kosher? We always say, right, Ruba Kakul. Rove, we can assume everything's like the Rove. So says the Ramah, Elat Sarach Livdo Kulam, you have to check all of them, Davi Miyit the Shchiach. Since when it comes to the trefos of punctures in the lungs, it's something that's a minority miut, but shchiach, it's a common miut. It's a common minority. We'll have to figure out what that definition is. What percentage becomes miut de shchiach? But it's a common enough, it's frequent enough, that does require its own bedika. Now the Ramah gets this from a Tshuvas HaRashba. The Rashba, number 15, is talking about a particular lentils and beans and olives that were had some bugs in them. He wanted to know, the Shoel wanted to know, do you have to check all the beans, all the various lentils, or it's enough to check rove? So says the Rashba in the Tshuva, Haminim halalu, these types of species, beli safek, it's no doubt in my mind, harechesh matzah, and the rechesh is the bugs, there are bugs that are matzah that are common in these types of food. Ulafikach afa pisha badak ktasan, even though you checked some of them, ein bedikas haktas mitares chavroseh, that's not going to save you from checking the rest of it. Ki be'emes ein harechesh matzah berov, you're granted most will not have this bug. Umikol makom, says the Rashba, have a miyat hamatzah, it's common enough. Yes, it's less than 50%, but it's common enough to have these bugs that you would have to check all the lentils and beans. V'chol shematzoi, whenever there's a mir hamatzoi, ein somchen al bedikas haktas. You cannot rely on the fact that you checked some of them. Some of the heads of lettuce are going to help you check, cover the rest of them. It doesn't work like that. V'lo al bedikas harov. So when it comes to checking lettuce, there are some institutions that say if you check, three heads of lettuce, that's a chazaka, all the heads of lettuce are kosher. But that's not so clear, because if lettuce has a mid hamatzoi, if a certain percentage, let's just say 10% now, of lettuce has bugs in them, then that's a mid hamatzoi, and you have to check it nonetheless. So I'm not talking about bedikas tilaim right now. There's very fascinating discussions. Rav Asher Weiss has a whole discussion in Chelek Gimel, this Tshuvas, about bedikas tilaim, but not for now. But whenever there's a mid hamatzoi, so then you have to do a bedika to check everything. And that's what he says at the end of the Rashba. Hamashal bazeh, what is the great example for this? Bedikas hareya, checking the lung. Shu miyat hamatzoi, that even though there's only a miyat, but it's a common miyat. V'ein somchin bedikas hamiktas al bedikas hamiktas v'afil al rov. Even though you found 51% lungs to be clean, 51% of the beans to be clean, you still have to check all of them because it's a miyat hamatzoi. Now the Mechamis Hashem says the same idea in number 16. It's Daf Gimel Amud Beis in the Rif on the Chulin. He also says that you have to check when there's a Mir HaMatzoi. Even though Rov are Kasher, you have to still check if it's a Mir HaMatzoi. So this is a fascinating Divrei Agadah that the Mechamis Hashem quotes, the last line of page number 3. U'bilamdeinu be'inin Agadah Amru Kein Amar Rebbe Yehuda Ben Padya Miyigla Afar Meinecha. Who's going to take the dirt off your eyes, Adam Arishon? Fascinating Medrash. We couldn't say this had you not seen this in the Medrash. She'ata, it's accusing Adam Arishon, lo yicholes la'amod b'nisonecha. You couldn't stand by your test. You failed your test, Adam. Afilu sha'achas, you couldn't wait 1 hour. Because the Chazal tell us that Adam Arishon would have been able to eat from the Eitz Hadas had he just waited a little bit longer when Shabbos would have begun. But he had no patience. And he ate too early, he jumped the gun, and we are where we are now. He got kicked out of Gan Eden, and here we are. V'harei banecha, but your children, says the Medrash to Adam Arishon, mishamrin kol ha-mitzvos shenitnu lahem, vomd mahem. We keep all the Torah and mitzvos, that we stand by them, Echad mehem omed, one guy will stand, but no teya, he's going to plant a ma'adir, menachesh, mezamir, he's going to weed and prune and all these different things to the food. Tareach umashki, he's going to plant it and he's going to water it. He's going to work hard. Ro'eh peros, he's going to see fruits begin to grow. Springs right around the corner. Neturish lafanav, he sees a beautiful grape grown. Kishen mivkaros lashon of bikurim. V'kovetz yada, he shuts his hand, he doesn't take from it. V'eina toim hem, he doesn't taste from this fruit. Ad ubanecha tisvu zed zeh tochlu etzeh lo tochlu. This you have to eat, this you can't eat. Ubayoser adam yisrael lo keach behemaseh o'eit, he takes a sheep or goat or kesev or shor. V'shochet, he shechs it, he waits. Umafshit, he has to skin it. Rochet, he has to wash it. And then, you know what he has to do? Bodek berei, he has to check the lungs. V'nimta trefa, moneh b'yado, he can't eat it. V'eino ochel, havi amr sashem tzufa. We see from all this that the patience that we have, the process that we wait for to eat food, Adam couldn't wait a shah achas, but we wait months and months and months. We shecht an animal, a cow, which is pretty expensive. And we find there to be a puncture, we throw it out. We sell it to a guy. And we have to shecht another animal. That's the patience. Fascinating divya gada that the Ramban, you know, kind of sticks in here. But he finishes off saying, on the underline here, Bivadai shezu abadika medivrayim. After all that said, though, the requirement to check when there's a mir hamatzoi is only a din dirabanan. We still do it, but it's only a chiv midirabanan. The Meshech Chachmah on Parshat Bishalach, in Parshat Bo rather, the end of Parshat Bo, he says that the Medrash, the words Miyamim Yamima, the days, the Medrash says this is number 17. Miyamim Yamima, Magid the Adam Tzarech Livdok Es HaTfilin Acher Yud Beis Chodesh. This is the source that you have to check the Tfilin every year. Now we don't do it every single year; we do it much, much less frequent than that. But this is a Medrash that says it's an inyan of Bedikas Tfilin. So the Mishkanos Yaakov in Yoredeya Simon Tez Zayin, he quotes, "Hevi mikan raya lebedikas hareya mir tamatzoi David deraisa." He proves from this medrash against the Ramban that the need to check the lungs is actually a din deraisa, because the medrash says you have to check tefillin every year because it's mir hamatzoi. It's very common that your tefillin could get ruined. No, don't think lahalach lamaisa. Nowadays our tefillin are made very, very different. They're much more preserved. But back then, it wasn't as well made. The ink wasn't as strong. The cloth wasn't as good. Many reasons why something bad could happen. But there's a din deraisa to check tefillin. So too says the Mishkanos Yaakov, there's a din deraisa to check when it comes to the mir hamatzoi of the reya. Meshech Chachmah says it doesn't make sense. The jump. A very fascinating, fundamental chiluk, says the Meshech Chachmah, between bedikas reya, when it comes to checking the lung versus checking tefillin. Why? What's going to happen if you don't check your tefillin and mezuzah? And it's possible. You don't get a mitzvah. If you're missing a letter, you don't get a mitzvah. But what happens if you don't check the lungs? Because rov lungs are kosher. So then he says that you would be considered ones. And when it comes to ones, you're pater from an avera. Ones could exempt you from an avera, ones rachmana patre, but ones cannot allow you to do a mitzvah. That's not a key mitzvah if you do something but ones. You don't get a check mark for doing the mitzvah. It's a p'tur in the avera, but not a key of the mitzvah. Anyone know if it's so clear? Anyone know anyone who argues on this? Rav Yosef Engel and Asman Daraisa has a whole shtickle on this idea. He has two. One part he talks about ones rachmana patre, whether or not that's a p'tur ones, where it's even as if there was no ma'is avera done at all. That's one hakir he has. It's based on a Ran in the Dharm you guys are doing. Oh, Shavuos this year? Close enough. So Ran in the Dharm talks about this in the Gemara in Ksubis, whether or not, again, ones rachmana patre is a p'tur onesh, or it's as if there was never an avera. But he also discusses whether or not an ones could allow a person to mikayim a mitzvah. This Meshech Chachmah clearly says not that case. So although when it comes to checking tefillin mezuzah, there's room to require it on a deraisa level, because otherwise you don't get the mitzvah, it's not so clear that when it comes to checking from a avera, from a trefa, that may not require a bedika on a deraisa level. Midirabanan, at least the Ramban says you do require it, it's brought down Shulchan Aruch, but not necessarily midiraisa. Let's finish off with one last point here. What exactly is a mir hamatzoi? The Rishonim are talking about when there's a mir hamatzoi, so then you have to check for the lungs, you have to check for bugs. How do you define mir hamatzoi? So there's a three-way machlokas that they commonly bring. Number one is the Tshuvas HaRivash, one of the Rishonim. The Rivash writes, number 18, Shemir Tamatzoi wrote to Lomar, what's the definition? Hu karov lemechta v'rogel yot, it's close to 50, but not quite. Dumio demir tamatzoi hamuska lemefarshim besirchas areya. So what does it mean? 49%, it sounds like. Close to 50, but not quite. He doesn't give you an exact definition, but it's pretty close to 50. So they say 49% would be considered mir hamatzoi. That's pretty strong. Anything less than that, you would not have to do any checks. That's a huge heter. Huge heter. Rabbi Yashiv is quoted as saying 7%. And Mishkas Yaakov is a very, very long tshuva. Very long tshuva. He brings a raya from a Gemara in Baba Basra based on wine going bad. When you sell wine, you could assume that a certain amount of wine goes bad, and that's 10%. So he says mir hamatzoi is 10%. Those are three basic shitas. I'm going to finish off with Rav Asher Weiss. He quotes these shitas, Rav Asher and Mishkas Yaakov, and he says in Parsha Shemini as follows, number 21. You can't use percentages to define mir hamatzoi, says Rav Asher. Halo harishonim kimalachim, they were much greater than we were, they were like angels. Lo asku b'medai statistics, they were not involved in statistics. We saw many Gemaras, Misa Shchicha, Misa Lo Shchicha. No one mentioned any statistics there. Lo matzinu b'divrayim b'shum makom shiikvu ha'alachos l'fi achuzim. It's not based on percentages ever. El kol mir hamatzoi, what's mir hamatzoi? Tadir, something that happens frequent. Hu mofia kedavar shebeshkira. It just comes off as something very routine. Ve'einenu metzias chariga. Doesn't come off as an exception. That's a mir hamatzoi. V'tzarech lachosh lo, and you have to be concerned that that might be present. Vein hadavar tali b'achuzim, not based on percentages, ela b'tadiros. So now, of course, it's very hard to define. That does just tells us there is no definition. So what's considered frequent, what's not? He doesn't answer that question. It's true. Statistics are not discussed. Percentages are not discussed. When it comes down to it, you have to ask poskim, who really know things, is that considered frequent or not? There's no real mesorah of what the percentages are. So either way, hopefully this was some level of exposure, a nice survey throughout different sugyas of where you see statistics, actual theory come up in halacha, in Shas. I want to finish before I open up the floor to questions about, you know, I mentioned before the reason why I left working is because I had a drive to learn. And I mentioned before I was very happy that I worked, and I'm even happier now that I'm not working anymore, but I'm very proud that I spend time as an actuary. But you each have to realize that you each have your own individual path for you to go on. And just because when you're younger, a parent or an adult said to you, you should be an actuary because you're good at math, doesn't mean that you have to be an actuary. Maybe it's for you, maybe it's not for you. I'm not trying to convince you or discourage you, but I would recommend that you guys do open your eyes up to other options out there. When I, one summer, I spent, my cousin worked in a hedge fund, and he wanted me to work for him to figure out some trends in the market based on calculus and other types of math, financial mathematics. And I spent a week doing it until I said, you know what, I'm going to go learn. I went to more Shakola instead. But he said something to me very, very powerful, which I always kept in the back of my mind, is that having a math mind, the way you think in numbers, is very much coveted by any type of profession. You know, most finance guys are decent at math. They're not math minds. If you're a math mind, you could go to a finance job or any job, real estate job. Having that math mind could really put you up at a tremendous advantage. So if you have a drive to be an actuary, be an actuary. But just I'm requesting from all of you, open your minds to other options out there because you really do have an advantage over everyone else. If you're really strong at math, that's very impressive. When they see math major, math minor on your resume, that impresses everyone very, very much. So when I told my parents, I was married at the time, and we our second kid was just born, Yocheved. She was born in January. I quit in September after that. So I told my parents, and my father said to me a very powerful line that kept with me, and he said to me, it's important that you have to be happy with whatever you do. And I wasn't happy. And even though I'm sure he wanted me to stay working and making a good parnasa, it's a very nice parnasa, you know, it goes back 10 years ago, So he wanted me to be happy, and I wasn't happy. So you have to always make sure that you're happy. And if you're not happy as an actuary or any other job, there are other options out there. But the key is, if you're going to work every single day and you're not happy, then you won't be happy, your family won't be happy. You have to enjoy what you do. So whatever job you're going to go into, bring it to life. Connect the Torah to it. See, these sugyas throughout Shas, throughout Shulchan Aruch, really very much relate to your job and to your life. So I'll finish with one story, then we'll open up with questions. That I heard this maisa a little while ago, Rav Yashiv. He also had a job once upon a time. Rav Yashiv, many years ago, worked as part of the government. He was in the one of the judges who was on the Beis Din of Israel. And he took a paycheck from the state of Israel. So, as you would imagine, there were some crazy people in Mea Shearim who do crazy things. And one day, Rav Yashiv was coming back from work. He was working in the Beis Din. And a certain Haredi was not very pleased with him supporting and taking money from the state of Israel. So the individual took eggs and threw three eggs at Rav Yashiv. Now, Rav Yashiv was very makbid on a Talmud Chacham not walking in the streets anywhere, being dirty. So Rav Yashiv took out his handkerchief and slowly started to wipe off the three eggs that were dripping down his coat. And while doing so, that individual, that Haredi, was busy staring at him, watching as Rav Yashiv was disgracefully cleaning off his coat. And despite that, Rav Yashiv didn't get upset. He had his poise. He kept himself together. He didn't yell at the guy. And finally, when he was done cleaning off his coat, he said to the individual, that I give you a bracha. He didn't get upset. He gave him a bracha. I give you a bracha that you should be too busy to ever do this again. And what happened was, this man was married for many years, was not zochet any children, and the next year his wife gave birth to three, to triplets. And he certainly was too busy to do anything like this ever again. So the key is, be happy with whatever you're doing, be happy with your job, connect it to learning, bring it to life, and Mirza Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, will bring a lot of simcha to your family. Any questions, feel free. Otherwise, we could go. I may have class to go to.